Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, a podcast by the Public Transport Association Australia, New Zealand.
Each episode, we interview a top female executive from the public transport sector in Australia, New Zealand, and around the world.
If you're interested in leadership, workplace gender equality, or building clean, green transport for the future, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome to another episode of Women Who Move Nations, the Public Transport Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Batsis. I'm the Executive Director for Future Mobility at the Department of Transport and Planning in Victoria. I'm also a PTA ANZ ambassador, and I'm super delighted that I'm interviewing today Natasha Zelkifli, who's a director at YTL Construction in Malaysia. And super excited to talk to you today, Natasha. I know we met a few years back in 2018. We were just saying at SITCE and then saw you at the UITP Summit in Stockholm as well in 2019, which is quite some time ago. So great to have you here.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm so happy to be able to chat with you on this beautiful morning in Kuala Lumpur.
Amazing. I'm in Melbourne. It is not that beautiful. It's pretty cold, but I know we've both got our cups of tea. So I'm going to get started. And I'm really keen to hear about your role that you're currently in as the director at YTL Construction in Malaysia. So can you share a bit about your role and what your focus areas are?
I work for YTL Construction, and we're responsible for building a 192-kilometer rail line from the beginning of the state of Johor all the way down south to Johor Bahru. It is the final piece in the puzzle for the Malaysian rail line along the west coast of Peninsula Malaysia. So we've been working on this project for almost 5 years, and it's almost completed. I'm responsible for a variety of issues relating to this project. Number one, I'm responsible for land acquisition and all land matters. I have a team that does approvals and liaisons with local, federal, and state authorities. And I have a team that does a lot of communications, public outreach, and external events to raise awareness about the rail line that will be built. To date, we have spoken to more than 7,000 students across the state to create some sort of awareness about the rail service that will be offered for them in the future. And over COVID, we were tasked by management to set up the YTL Learning Academy. We incubated it and operationalized it. And now the YTL Learning Academy, which comes under me, has a team of 6 people to promote learning and upskilling for all the staff within YTL Construction. So that's what I do every day.
That's awesome. You've got a lot on your plate, and I'm keen to hear more. It's interesting, actually, because you're in rail construction, and that's very exciting, I've got to say, that your project's going to be delivered this year. I'm keen to hear, though, how did you get into this, Natasha? Like, I want to know more about your career history. I know you said as well that your mum's a Kiwi. So how have you ended up where you are?
I think nothing is by design in my life. Everything happens for a reason. I have a law degree from the London School of Economics. I came home and I worked with my father for a few years. And then I took time out. I was a full-time stay-at-home mom for 7 years, and I raised 2 young kids at the time. When they were in kindy and in primary school, I went back to work. And I worked for a not-for-profit called Malaysia Europe Forum, which was set up to promote the interests of Malaysia within the European Union. So after 3 years, there were some issues there. So I left and I got offered a job to work for the regulator. The public transport regulator at the time was called the SPAD. And I worked there for 3 years. And then I got an offer to be the head of international relations at the operator. So I moved over to a company called Prasarana, and I was heading up international relations there. And after 3.5 years there, I got invited to join YTL Construction. There was a project that YTL Construction had been awarded, which was actually the high-speed rail link between Kuala Lumpur and Singapore. So I was hired for that project. But in 2018, after the general elections in Malaysia, the new government that came in decided to put a pause on that high-speed rail project. So YTL Construction parked me at the other rail project that they were working on, which is this 192-kilometer rail line. So actually, everything that I've done in my career hasn't really been properly planned or thought out. Opportunities came along, they arose, and I was very happy to grasp them with both hands and say, okay, fine, I'd love to do it. Let's give it a go. So that's really been the path that I've taken over my working career life.
I love that. That's so inspirational, actually, Natasha, just to think about that in terms of taking the opportunities as you've come. You've said something actually that I didn't know about you, that you took 7 years out while you raised your kids. I mean, can I ask you, was it hard coming back? Like, how did you make that move back in?
It was hard coming back because you lose confidence. And because you feel that you're no longer as worthy. Because when I was in university in London and I was with peers, the peers that were alongside me at university had moved up the career ladder when I had taken time out. So to transition back was actually a thought in my mind for about 6, maybe 9 months. I was looking at all sorts of interesting sort of opportunities and wondering, should I set up a little cake shop? Should I open up a petrol station? Should I work for the government? So I just sort of felt that I wanted to give something a go. And the offer to work for that not-for-profit was something that I really appreciated. And I was able to work from home and work flexibly in a city which didn't really offer it at the time. It was hard. I made sure that I was there for pickup and drop off at kindy and school. And when the kids went to bed at night, I went back and I started work again. So it's about courage. It's about resilience and believing in yourself, really. It's actually a mental game more than a physical professional game.
Thanks for sharing. I love that. It's a mental game. That's really good. I'm going to remember that one. Natasha, I want to talk to you now about public transport and what's going on globally. And I know you're connected. And as I said, I met you the UITP Summit quite a few years ago now in Sweden. I wanted to ask, I mean, from the position you're in, and I know you're based in Malaysia, but you're very connected around the world. What do you think the big issues are for public transport now? And what do you think the opportunities are?
I think the big issues right now is actually post-COVID, the expense of building infrastructure. Because to commit billions, some governments will probably have to rethink and see whether they can really afford it with the lower ridership post-COVID. I think that that's a big problem here in Malaysia and something that they have to overcome. I also worry about obsolescence in the age of disruption. And we see how fast technology is moving these days. You can start to build a rail line and it'll take whatever X number of years to complete. But by the time it's completed, things would have changed from the time of inception, really. So I think those are the big, big issues that policymakers and governments and the private sector have to think about. But I do think that the opportunities are there as well. I think public transport is being democratized with the introduction of disruptors, especially at the first and last mile. I think that that's an interesting opportunity for passengers, but I also think it puts governments under pressure as well to be able to offer a door-to-door service in a way for all the passengers wanting to move around. I also believe, and I think everyone will agree with me, public transport will become, is one of the biggest saviors for our planet. With climate change knocking at our door with such a thunderous thud, we have no choice but to ensure that public transport is readily available, not only in the advanced developed countries, but also in the developing world as well. So it's really up to the governments to decide how and where they prioritize their funding.
Yeah, wow. There's some really good points there, Natasha. And actually, it's so important, I think, to really acknowledge the costs now of building post-COVID. We're seeing that here in Australia and in New Zealand. It's just gone through the roof. So I wanted to ask you now about your passion for supporting women and in rail in particular. And I know you mentioned earlier the YTL Learning Academy, and I know you're very passionate about supporting learning generally. When I met you, I think you had just recently founded the Women in Rail Malaysia. And I wanted to ask you more about that. Like, where did the idea come from and how did you get it off the ground? What have you learned along the way?
So the idea came from one of my friends in Kuala Lumpur. He came to me one day and he said, did you know there's a Women in Rail in the UK? And I said, wow, that's really interesting. And through some people, I managed to get an introduction to the founder of Women in Rail UK. And I managed to meet with her in London one day, and I was very interested to take this idea forward. So I went to see the CEOs of all rail and transport related agencies in Kuala Lumpur. And I asked these CEOs and I said, would you support an entity such as this? And they all said yes. And from there, what I started to do was I'd organize these lunches in my office on Friday. I'd just send out random WhatsApp messages to anyone and I'd say, hey, come for lunch. I'm thinking of setting up Women in Rail Malaysia. I'd really like to hear your thoughts. So after, I think, three Friday lunches and meeting maybe 100, 150 ladies, I realized that I could do this. And then I wanted to be properly incorporated, properly structured and set up so that we could raise funding. So I had a sponsor, actually, the Institution of Railway Signal Engineers of Malaysia, IRSCE Malaysia. They funded our incorporation. And then I had another friend who funded the setting up of our website. And then we just set up and we kept on going. And today we have more than 700 members. It's not a lot compared to the UK 7,500 members, but we are, of course, a much smaller country and industry here as well. But we are a bit different from the UK. I deliberately wanted to be more inclusive, and we admit male members here in Malaysia. We also admit students. So we have quite a few students who have joined and who are very interested to learn, to network, to join our talks, to also join our conferences. And I'm really pleased to say that Women in Rail has done many, many talks in schools, in primary and secondary schools, as well as in universities, because we want to ensure that there's a quality, talented pipeline coming into this industry. If you are a student in high school or in university, unless someone comes and talks to you or your parents advise you, you may not know that the rail industry is actually a growing sector for you to consider. Some people traditionally may prefer to go into banking, into property development, into oil and gas. But hey, why don't you consider a career in the rail space? And that's what Women in Rail Malaysia is working really, really hard to do. And interestingly enough, the founder of Women in Rail UK, she said something to me that I'll never forget. She said, the biggest challenge that women in rail in the UK face is, believe it or not, a lack of confidence. And I realized that this is something. It's not an unnatural phenomenon. I think generally women across the board lack this confidence. And I want to make sure that Women in Rail Malaysia provides an opportunity for them to get out of their shell, to be a bit more exposed, to learn. And from there, hopefully, they will have a better understanding of their ability for them to be a better professional at the workplace. And that would be, honestly, a dream come true if everyone would be able to feel that way from amongst our members. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, what an incredible mission. And I love that you're out in the schools encouraging people to think about a career in rail. I think this point you mentioned about confidence is really interesting, actually, because I was reading something recently around confidence being a skill. It's like an action you take and you practice it. And what you were saying, I think, kind of feeds into my next question, because, Natasha, I was going to ask you if you think we could just do one or two things to support women entering into more leadership roles in transport, bridging the gender pay gap, which we know exists all around the world. What are your thoughts on what we could be doing?
I think action needs to come from the top. I think the men at the top need to be able to open up doors for women. I am where I am today because I had very, very supportive, understanding bosses who allowed me to do what I was good at and what I'd like to do. I think providing those opportunities really helped and boosted with my confidence. Plus, I never had a boss who was an egotistical maniac. So they were not offended. They were not miffed when, as you said earlier, my profile expanded globally, internationally. Their bosses were just very happy to allow me that space to grow and grow even further. And I feel that if we can provide this exposure to lots and lots of women, that increases their confidence exponentially. The tricky part, though, is we can have that. We can have it on a silver platter. But if women do not step up and embrace the opportunities themselves, I think we let everyone else down too. So there are various juggling of responsibilities to be undertaken at different parts and stages of a female professional's career life. Marriage, young children, older children have left the nest. those sorts of things. So we need to provide a supportive working environment for women to be able to juggle all those balls in the air. Some countries do it better than others. You can see how it's much more difficult in a country like Japan, for example. In Japan, there is no home care readily available for the children. And I think that leaves a lot of women out of the game when they do start to have children. And you can see it because the birth rate is lower in countries like that. To answer your question about the gender pay gap, I really have no answer for a question like this, because I too wonder a lot at how this issue can be managed better. I must admit, I suspect perhaps I am a victim myself. Am I being properly paid? I can't ascertain that. There is no transparency. There is no visibility. Salaries are very hush-hush and a very private matter here in corporate Malaysia. So I don't really know if I fit comfortably where I'm supposed to be given my seniority. And I must admit, it really irritates me, because I wish there was more transparency here in Malaysia.
If you're enjoying Women Who Move Nations, make sure you follow us on your favourite podcast platforms and rate the show to help more people find us.
Follow the Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand to learn more about public transport and to keep up to date with all our events and activities.
Our website is ptaanz.org. We're also on LinkedIn. Just search Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand.
And our Twitter handle is PTAANZ_.
If you have any feedback or questions, please send us an email at info@ptaanz.org.
Thank you for sharing, Natasha. I mean, I think actually this is an issue around the world, the transparency. So it's starting to get better in pockets, but there's certainly a lot to go. You were mentioning a couple of things which really got me thinking, right? So sounds like you've had good fortune to be supported and sponsored in your career climb, I guess, you know, kind of climbing up the ladder in a way in which you say you didn't set out in terms of planning it or designing it. But I wanted to ask you, you know, as we've kind of been talking about, it's still a male-dominated industry. You know, the fact that there is a Women in Rail, you know, association is because of this, right? So I wanted to ask, though, in terms of women in leadership roles in Malaysia and I guess in the environments that you've worked in, have you had any moments yourself in your journey where the reality of being a senior female has presented a challenge? And if so, how did you overcome that?
Honestly, I don't think I've faced that challenge, because I've always made sure that I go into every meeting knowing my stuff and that I bring value to the table. I'm professional and I really work hard to deliver. And I think and I hope that I'm not seen at the table as a male or a female. Sometimes you will get unwarranted comments in passing. And honestly, I put that down to sometimes men really don't really think before they speak. But has it affected me as a senior female leader? I don't think so. I think I'm just seen as someone who's part of the ecosystem and who will work to support and ensure good outcomes for the organization. That's what I'd like to think.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. And I wanted to ask, like, you made this comment, right, around when a male speaks, and you said, you know, they don't think before they speak. But how do you respond in those moments, right, where someone says something and it might not be inappropriate, but there's definitely a something not quite right about it, or you know it's kind of this subtle, yeah, like it doesn't quite sit well with you. How do you respond to that when people say things?
I think it really depends on how shocked I am, because if I'm shocked, I'm stunned. I'm rarely at a loss for words. But when I am shocked or embarrassed or stunned, I tend to clam up. And I think I retreat for a moment to try to gather my thoughts and figure out how to react. There have been times where I've come back and at a different moment and said, hey, what you said was inappropriate. But perhaps I don't do it as often as I should. And that, I think, is a failure on my part, because we need to call it out when it does happen. But we don't do it all the time. And I guess we just, in a way, maybe sometimes prefer not to ruffle feathers and just get on with things. But as I'm getting older and as I get more confident, I guess, those sorts of comments don't really happen. I don't know why. Perhaps they think now before they speak in my presence. But I'm hoping that it just gets less and less because there's more awareness right now. And in the last, 2, 3, 5 years with Me Too and all this understanding about what's acceptable and what's not, I'd like to think that men are a bit more careful before they put their big fat foot in their mouth.
I appreciate you sharing, Natasha. It's great to hear you just being so honest and authentic and just calling it how it is. This is actually something that I really love about you from, you know, the moment I met you. I really admired you and I know that you're, you know, you've really been recognized globally as a change maker in this space for your work that you're doing in transport and rail and supporting women. And I know you've been granted a number of awards to really recognize your contribution to our industry. And I kind of wanted to ask you a question, which in some ways is quite personal, but I wanted to ask, where do you think you get your spirit, your fighting spirit, the passion to make a difference and to keep driving and doing all the things that you do?
I remember when I turned 40 and, you know, people like to make such a big deal out of these milestone birthdays, right? Oh, turning 30, oh, turning 40. And when I turned 40, I remember taking stock of where I was at in my life. I was in a really good place. My marriage was going pretty well. My kids were healthy and happy. Career was going fine. And I just realized I need to give back. You mentioned the words good fortune just now. And yeah, you're right. I've been so blessed. And I wanted to be able to do something because I knew and I know not many people are as fortunate as I am. I grew up with parents who deliberately tried to instill confidence in all us four sisters. And I realized that my confidence level, my exposure growing up had allowed me to be the person I am today. So I really think that it's really important to be able to want to pay it forward. And that is something that I try to do actually every single day because it's not about me. I mean, I have everything that anyone could ever ask for, God willing, you know. And when there are challenges that come forward, I mean, for example, last year, I had a pretty serious medical challenge. I was in the ICU for 6 days and then the doctor said, off you go home. And I was on medical leave for 3 months. I wasn't even sure if I could come back to work. But here I am today. I'm healthy again. I'm strong and I feel great and I want to really make a difference. So one thing I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be organizing another Women in Rail Malaysia conference in Kuala Lumpur on the 3rd of August. I have been able to pick up the phone, send messages to friends. And now I've got a speaker lineup with speakers coming in from the UK, from Japan, from Singapore, from France, from Indonesia. So I'm really excited to be able to offer something of value, not only to Women in Rail Malaysia members, but to the larger corporate community in Malaysia as well.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations and good luck for the conference. And Natasha, also thank you so much for speaking so openly around your health challenge. And I'm really glad to hear that you're well and you're back and, you know, feeling good. I wanted to ask you about mentoring now. Often we're talking about the importance of mentoring and how it can be particularly helpful for women to achieve their professional goals. And I wanted to ask you, what's your experience been with mentoring, both potentially as a mentor and a mentee? And do you have any advice?
So mentoring is a big thing, I think, in the Western world. But here in Malaysia, it isn't. There is no proper structure. There is no proper format. There's been some awareness, perhaps, over the last few years. But growing through my career, I never had a mentor per se. But what I did was when I worked with good people, I watched, observed and made a deliberate thought to emulate the good within them. I didn't really have people who I could talk to about my career path, my career choice. I wonder what I would have been like if I did. But of course, you have these sort of informal structures as well. So when you're in a bit of a pickle and you need some advice, you might call up one or two people and meet up for a coffee and chat. And maybe that's the journey that I experienced. I can't really say for sure because there's been so much going on in the workplace. But I would advise young ladies, young men even as well, to find this sort of mentor. So occasionally, once in a while, I'll get a message from a young person that I know and they'll reach out and they'll say, hi, how are you? Let's meet up one of these days. It'd be really nice to see you. And I try really hard to make time for when people reach out to me because I know that there must be something on their mind that they want to talk about. And I really want to make an effort to be able to support them, whatever they're going through. So I don't have a mentee or a bunch of mentees that I talk to, but I do want to help people who need help. So even in my office, in my department, there's some people who will come into my room and we'll have a chat, and then I try to assist them wherever it's possible. So I think mentoring can exist in an informal, unstructured way. But I think it's really also important that you find someone who gets you and who understands your personal challenges so that they can motivate you and give you that lift in order to become the very best version of yourself.
That's great. I love that advice. Thanks, Natasha. I wanted to ask you, coming back to this concept around confidence and, you know, just pitching yourself, right? Because as you say, you're in a senior role in an industry that is still in many places male dominated. And I wanted to ask if you've got advice for other women who are looking to pitch themselves for a senior role and move up the ladder. What's your advice on that? And do you have any advice around how women can negotiate their salary as well? And I acknowledge what you kind of said earlier in terms of the cultural non-transparency.
So negotiating salary is really interesting, right? Because I remember when I was coming into this job in YTL Construction, and I had my existing salary where I was currently working at, and then I figured I would ask for an X percent increase based on industry norm here in Malaysia. And when I told my husband that, this is my ask, you know, I would like X amount. And he looks at me, he goes, why are you asking for so low? And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, you should ask for XX. And I thought, I don't think I can do that. He said, why not? I said, well, industry norm is this. And he said, so what? You're worth this much. You should ask for XX. And so negotiating salary, and I remember sitting across the table from my boss and asking for that amount because I'd written it down in the application form. And he says, you're wanting this. And I said, yes. And then I got it. I got what I asked for. And so I think you just need to ask, because if you never ask, you'll never know. And what's the worst that can happen? And then a negotiation process takes place. In the crudest of terms, it's like bartering in a market, perhaps, in a some sort of, I mean, it really is, don't you think? Because but at the end of the day, never sell yourself short. And I have to remind myself every day. So for all you young people who are coming up the ladder, I think you need to value your worth, but I also think you need to be able to have under your belt the necessary years of hard work that you've put in. Because if you're afraid of hard work and you don't stick it out, you can't really get very far. Every successful person I know, everyone is a hard worker. I don't know any successful person that is lazy-ish. So let's face it, hard work wins. In this younger generation, I can see a lot of people who feel like, oh, this doesn't work for me, I'm going to quit and find another job. And what about and then they say, oh, this isn't for me, I'm not really sure what I want, I'm going to take a bit of time out and just think about what I want to do with my life. I think you shouldn't be job hopping. I think you should need to show longevity and resilience. I think it's really important that you stick it out. Because when you're young, that's when you have the time. You're not bogged down perhaps by a husband or kids or elderly parents. I think that's when you have to really take the opportunity to shine in an industry. And in the public transport industry, there aren't many women at the top. And so I think you should really give it your all and make it happen for yourself.
I love that, Natasha. Pep talk, also don't sell yourself short. I'm going to remember that. I wanted to ask you then, right? So around the confidence theme, we're still unpicking at that. I want to talk about imposter syndrome. And I always refer to that as the kind of voice at the back of my head that says, oh, you know, you can't do this, or why would you think you can do that? And, you know, just kind of get that doubt. And I still got it, right? Even though I'm getting better as I get older. I wanted to ask you, how do you approach imposter syndrome? What do you do when you experience moments of doubt, and how do you back yourself?
I remember sitting for my first heads of department meeting in YTL Construction. And here I was, this female. I think there was only one other woman in the room and maybe like a dozen men. And these were hard, seasoned men who'd been in the company or in the industry for decades. And I was thinking, good God, I'm going to be eaten alive. And I made a conscious decision there and then to not show my fear, number one, to speak confidently with assertiveness. And to put it in a nutshell, I had to fake it till I made it. But that was only for a couple of weeks. Once I found my feet, once I learned what was needed on the job, I was able to start to be my real self. But at the end of the day, I don't know whether you'd call it imposter syndrome. I think, and I was thinking about this yesterday, before you're in the role, you may be a bit nervous. But when you're in the role and you're still there and you're wondering, how did I get into a role, this role, then perhaps you feel like a bit of an imposter. But at the end of the day, if other people think you're up for the job, why do you doubt yourself? You wouldn't be hired if they didn't think you could do it. So you shouldn't really feel that you are an imposter. You're just a bit late to the party in the sense that you haven't really got yourself together and realized the value that you can and will bring to the table. And so I wouldn't really call it imposter syndrome. I really think that that's perhaps not doing ourselves justice. I just think you're taking a bit longer to get there to realize that this is where you're meant to be and this is the value that you can bring to the people around you.
I love that so much. So good. And Natasha, you're just so beautiful in your articulation of your thoughts. Thank you so much for sharing. I think a lot of people listening will be taking a lot away from what you're sharing with us. I'm down to my last question. It's the question that I always ask. What's your top piece of advice for people who are early in their careers?
Work hard, read up, don't look stupid at the table. A boss of mine had a good advice once. He said to anyone going out to a meeting with government officials or with external companies, try not to look stupid. I really love that because I don't want to be that person at the table where I don't know what other people are talking about. So work hard, know what you need to do to deliver and stay positive, stay busy, and find yourself a good network that will help you whenever you need that support. Because at the end of the day, however old you are, however experienced you are, there will come a time where you need help. Maybe someone's died. Maybe you're going through a divorce. Maybe the children are sick. Maybe your daycare is not able to help you today to look after the kids. When that happens, you really have to hold your hand out and help the people who need help most. And when that happens, when it's your turn and you need help, everyone will offer you that support and security as well.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Natasha. That's the end of our interview. It has been so fun speaking with you. I super appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Michelle. It's been so, so nice having the chance to chat with you again, to reconnect and to share my thoughts with your listeners as well. I do appreciate it. All the best to you and your podcast.
That was Natasha Zalkifli, the director at YTL Construction in Malaysia. And you've been listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Batsis, and I look forward to sharing with you soon.
Thank you for listening to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast. This series is produced by Dylan Adler and Sophia Dickinson for the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. To find out more, please visit our website, ptaanz.org. Tune in for more soon.